10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling every damn night. Can you believe it? So-called President Biden actually pardoned his son. And now the weather. No, really. I'm like, what? And the only reason I'm mentioning this, because it's not the sort of thing we usually mention, this is such big news. And it's Sunday night. No one else is going to mention it because they're all asleep. They're all drunk. Everybody else you listen to, they're like drunk or passed out from doing terrible things over the weekend. Let me get you some facts, because I can't believe what this is. I'm like, really? You're kidding me. Let's just see. So President Biden pardoned his son. Biden is slammed by his own party after a shocking U-turn. Hold on. I'm having trouble. I'm always having trouble with my computer. No, really. That's what he said. He said, what? Biden is slammed by his own party after a shock U-turn decision to pardon his son on gun and tax crime. Now, what's interesting is the rationale. Let me find the best way to get to the rationale. Yeah, he claims he was unfairly prosecuted on gun and tax crimes in an effort to break him after vowing just weeks ago not to step in. Not to get involved. That's what he promised. Calling his prosecution selective and unfair. Well, all prosecutions selective. They only prosecute one person at a time, one company at a time. But he also said that he's 5.5 years sober, that he was doing cocaine at the time of his tax or gun crimes. All right, here's the thing about every member of a drug addict's family, every member who's an enabler, they all say, well, you know, he's 5.5 years sober. And good for that. But it always ignores the fact that having done cocaine itself is a felony. Breaking the law, doing cocaine is breaking the law. And it isn't that he was doing cocaine and therefore he was doing you know, he was breaking the law with taxes. And I'm trying to pull something up here. I'm not that incompetent. Give me one second. I want to be able to give you actual details. And, yeah. Sorry, guys. It's the same computer you get whenever you call customer service. It's very slow today. Republicans accuse President Biden of lying and corruption after the president's stunning Sunday night reversal to pardon his own son, Hunter. But the deeper cut came from a prominent member of his own party. Colorado Governor Jared Polis, a Democrat, ripped the decision and accused the chief of his party of putting family ahead of country. While as a father, I certainly understand the president's natural desire to help his son by pardoning him, I am disappointed they put his family ahead of the country. The Democrats don't think this was a good thing. I'll tell you why he did it. He wasn't going to do it. He kept saying he wasn't going to do it. And I believe that in his secret meeting, his two-hour meeting with President Trump, he said, look, I'll pardon you if you pardon my son. I believe that was what he tried to get done. And Trump said, I'm not going to pardon your son. And you're going to have to not only pardon me, you're going to have to erase the conviction in New York. You're going to have to completely eradicate my name from this earth. Oh, and fire those prosecutors. Fire those prosecutors. Erase every single thing about the records of the things I've done. Then I'll think about pardoning your son. Republicans accuse the president of lying and corruption and lying about the fact that until an hour ago, he said he was not going to pardon his son. It's an amazing reversal. If Biden, when he was still running for president, pardoned Trump, he probably would have won president. That's how badly they misunderstood the impact of those trials with the president of the United States and the future president of the United States. If he had pardoned Trump 6 months ago, put an end to all that crap, probably the Democrats could have won the last election. But, gee, they just weren't that smart. It's unbelievable that he actually is pardoning his son. Now, why did he pardon his son? Because he had to deal with Jill. Jill's so ticked that she's not still in the White House. He has to live with that. He has to live with her second-guessing every single thing both of them did. And he's like, she's like, well, then pardon our son. And he's like, I can't pardon. I said I wasn't going to do it. You do that. And she humped him for days, weeks, until he agreed to pardon Hunter. She did it. Promise you, she did it. He's like, I can't live with her unless I do it. Here's my number. It's 855-839-1210. I'm live on the radio. Oh, my God. I'm live on the radio at 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. I look forward to talking to you. I'm Walter Sterling. What the hell is this? Oh, it's Sterling every damn Sunday. Strippers on the loose.
We're live. Keith Appling. Famous basketball player, played for Michigan State, go Spartans, and also the O-Town Magic. He went to an exotic dancing emporium. A lot of NBA players and other pro athletes go and watch the ladies dance. It's an enjoyable hobby for them. So Keith Appling rolled into an unnamed strip club with a loaded AK-47. The people in the club decide, you know what, we don't want a guy just openly carrying a gun. And I think that's totally wrong. As a gentleman who enjoys my gun rights, I think I should be able to carry my AK-47 anywhere except church. I'm just not going to walk in strapped walking into church. I'm going to go in, do my time at church, you know, watch the priest say the mass and do all of that, and then go on my way. So that's generally the only time I'm not strapped. If I know that there are security guys in every church or parish or whatever, they're strapped and ready to go if some malfeasances occur. Mr. Appling's agent, Ronald Shade, says he hasn't heard from his client since the reported arrest. Last time I heard, he was traveling to L.A. with his daughter and back to Detroit to start working out. That's all I know at this point. As far as we know, there was not a clear motivation of why Mr. Appling was carrying that gun in the strip club. All I can say is that he probably is trying to protect the dancers and probably is not going to be picked up by an NBA team anytime soon. So off to Europe with him, or maybe he'll play in Asia. He's only 6'1", so he'd be probably pretty tall in Asia. So there you go. That's how this works. From the Champagne Room, this is Velo Hool, Strippers on Loose, Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I share the story of the time myself and the Pennsylvania State Police followed a stolen car across the George Washington Bridge. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling at Night, inspired by a hot girl.
So it says here that you hit your husband with a chair? Why'd you hit him with a chair? Because I couldn't lift the table.
Oh my God, look at that. There is Jared Dillian. Now, Jared Dillian is a really interesting character. First of all, he lives in a mansion near Myrtle Beach because he's so successful. And he did it in the right way. He did it himself. He started out humble beginnings. Was in the Coast Guard, worked his way up there. He is an expert in Wall Street and in money management and personal money management, but he has done the hardest thing possible. Making a lot of money, that's not easy. Building yourself up from scratch, not easy. custom building a mansion at the beach, at Myrtle Beach. Not easy. Managing 18, 19 cats. How many cats do you have, Jared?
I got seven cats.
Seven magnificent cats. But here's the thing. He's written a book of short stories. I can't imagine anything harder than the discipline it must have taken to write this book of short stories. Tell me about how you were able to move your brain from task, finance, money, abstract money things to poetry. How did you do this?
Well, it started when I got a graduate degree in writing. I have a master's in fine arts in writing from SCAD, which is the Savannah College of Art and Design. And I had written a novel in 2016, and I said I was never going to write fiction again because it was so hard. And I took a fiction class at SCAD, and I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. I ended up writing six stories when I was at SCAD, and then after I graduated, I wrote 10 more. So the collection is called Night Moves and Other Stories. It has 16 short stories total. And it might be the thing that I'm most proud of that I've ever written.
Why? Why are you proud of it?
Well, I mean, first of all, like there's, you know, a lot of people don't like short stories now because they're really not a lot of fun. Short stories have got, you know, without getting too political, they've gotten very woke. They typically have an international focus. There's not many American short stories anymore. My short stories are distinctly American. Short stories today are often written about people without money. And I write about, frequently, I write about rich people. I treat them with abundant empathy and curiosity. So these are stories that, and there's a fair bit of humor too. I mean, there's a lot of humor in these stories, but they're truly American stories, which makes them stand out.
Give me an example of one of these stories that is distinctly American.
So you have a 28-year-old tech consultant working at the Federal Home Loan Bank in Indianapolis. And he's on assignment for the summer, and he goes to Applebee's and he meets a 21-year-old waitress, and they go on a date. And she says, "Why don't you come back to my place?" And he says, "Wait a minute." He says, "I'm not going to do that." He says, "I have a rule. We have to spend 200 hours together before we have sex." And she says, "This is absurd, but okay, I'll play along." Throughout the course of the summer, they do spend 200 hours together. It's very hard. They can't keep their hands off each other. There's a lot of funny things that happen. There's a lot of tragic things that happen. And I'm not going to give away the ending, but no. It's fantastic.
Well, this is exciting because one of the things I've finally admitted to myself is I do not have the patience, tolerance, or environment to read a novel. I was an English major in college. I read a ton of novels then, but I was in study cubes and with no distractions. My life is all distractions today, and that's why I find the form of a short story so appealing and why I wanted to talk to you, because at the same time, like you said, they tend to either be about really poor people, which to me is just depressing, or science fiction. Many short story science fiction books. To have a positive rich people short story experience is going to be fantastic. Jared Dillian. The name of the book is Night Moves, which is a damn clever title. Where do I get this book?
You can get it off of Amazon. You can get either the ebook or the print book. It's, like I said, it's 16 stories. Night Moves and Other Stories is a title. Has 109 reviews at this point with 4.7 stars.
Look at you. Look at you. That's fantastic. I am grateful for our friendship. I'm glad that you're so prolific. Oh, my gosh. You wrote another book this year. What was the other one?
That was No Worries, my personal finance book.
No worries. Personal finance book. I gave it to both of my daughters.
Awesome.
And my and they need it, Jared. They need your finance book. So I'm very grateful for our friendship. Thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn night. The book is Night Moves. Get it at Amazon. Good evening. It's 26 past the hour, and I have an email, and I answer every email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Let's see. What is annoying me? Oh, yes. My neighbors, to torture me, have started to put up their Christmas lights. Now, there are two kinds of neighbors. They're the kinds who put them all up at once and make you feel immediately bad, and then the kind that seem to put them up, a couple in a window here, a Christmas tree here. That's how I am. These decorations will go up very slowly. The leg lamp in the window from A Christmas Story, that will go into multiple windows on the Sterling household. But I confess that I believe a key divide in any marriage is what color should the Christmas tree decoration lights be? And I believe this is a key issue in any marriage. Either they tend to be monocolor, usually all white, or random colors. But that takes many forms. There's that old-fashioned look of random colors, or there's the 1950s, 60s look of random colors. They're little cones. And if one goes out, they all go out, and you have to go through each bulb to find the right replacement, or what I want. And I believe in our hearts, this is what we all want, and don't have the guts to say it to our partner, significant other, children, husband, wife, whatever you call the person who insists on living with you, whatever you call that person, this is what we really want. We want bubble lights. That's what we want. And there's often a compromise, like a couple, a family will have a bubble light tree, double bubble light tree, right? That's not what I want. Not the little 3 foot high tree. I want the 8 foot high bubble light tree with a giant bubble light up top. Now, I know that at places like Home Depot, you can buy a giant bubble light for the front yard. I'd like to have 50 of them on my front yard. Imagine that. Bubble lights that are synced to music. That as the music plays, the bubbles go up and down with a much slower, faster rate. Isn't that what we want? We want bubble lights. How do you feel? 855-839-1210. I have gas, Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by George Carlin.
And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to help one another. We're going to save the planet? I am getting tired of that. I'm tired of Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists. I'm tired of these white, liberal, bourgeois, liberal, white people who think the only thing wrong with this planet is there aren't enough bicycle paths.
Now, there's Father Jim Drucker, who is a retired Catholic priest. We're very excited because we have many Catholic priest questions and have never either had the guts or the priest vulnerable enough to answer these questions. Father Drucker, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for your Thanksgiving blessings.
You're most welcome. May I say one thing? In 2 days, I'm going to be a priest, 46 years.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Happy. I'm so happy to have served our Lord these years. It's had its ups and downs. And I'm just grateful to love Jesus and have him love me. And it's not Bible thumping talk. It's just period. I gave my life to him, and I'm very happy I did, with a lot of joys and with some negatives.
It would not be a true Catholic if you were a Jesus thumper. Catholics just are not Jesus thumpers. You need to go
Amen.
Through you need to go through a committee in order to get to talk to Jesus directly. Whereas if you're in Georgia and you say you're a Christian, you immediately have a hotline, a red phone in your house directly to Jesus. Not true in the Catholic Church. You said with many joys and a few regrets. What are the regrets about having become a Catholic priest?
I would say on the church side and also on the side of we human beings, expecting much and sometimes too much, and many times not being as kind or as loving as they could be. It was difficult when I had my first parish in Massachusetts. My bishop at the time, Bishop Michael, had ordered me. He's the boss. He was the bishop. He said, "Would you renovate the church?" It was my first pastorate, and the people were so dangled angry at me. I mean, they cussed me. I'm from Kensington. They cussed me more than if I got cussed from K&A. I was so ticked. I actually one time went to my. I'm a tough kid from the streets of Philly. I went into my room, and I cried. I said, "What am I doing here? I could have been a successful jockey at ABC in New York, KFRC, San Francisco, OR, LS, et cetera. And here you are, Jimmy. What are you doing here?" So I called a priest named Franklin Darling. Just a wonderful man, so down to earth. I said, "Franklin, I need you." He said, "What's wrong, Jimmy?" And I told him. He said, "Look, come over here, go to confession. We'll talk about it. First of all, it's your boss's responsibility, your bishop. But you're the pastor there. And you're working for him. You're working for God. You're doing the right thing. And what you told me you said and what you did was exactly what I would have said and what I did." It was very tough there. They were very mean. They were tough. They were angry over things. Matter of fact, one time they hollered at me for changing the chandeliers. I changed the chandeliers because they were rusty. They were dirty. They were decrepit. I got new chandeliers at 75% off. Believe it or not, from a chandelier man that was Catholic, I could put him in, and the people cursed me because it's their grandfather's chandelier. From that moment on in my priesthood, I said, "No more, never, ever again will I give the declaration of a name with an item. When you give to God, your left hand should not see what your right hand doing. When you give to God, it should be that." And I told the people that from the pulpit. Henceforth, if the chandelier is your grandfather's, it will remain in his name and his memory with blessings and love. But no more will I put any names it'll be put in the bulletin once for all, and that's it. And I lived the rest of my 40-some years of priesthood.
All right, this is Father James Drucker, who is a Catholic priest. But before that, he was a midnight misfit. Before he was a Catholic priest, he was a midnight misfit. He worked all night. Like you did,
I loved it.
Third shift, late shift. You worked midnight to 6 on WARM in Scranton, which covered most of the Northeast. It went from mid-state New York down south to Philly, and it was a remarkable signal. But I have some all-night radio questions for you. Are you prepared, Father?
As ready as I can be.
Did you work midnight to 6 5 or 6 nights a week?
As far as I know, anyone in the radio business works 6 nights, of course. And the one night we get off, the only extra time I got off was Sunday mornings. Instead of 12 to 6, it would end at 4 a.m. so they could do transmitter maintenance, like 2 hours less. But again, it was 12 to 6 from that time. I had Monday off. Came back in Monday night.
So overnight, you were not running a lot of commercials. You were playing songs for 6 hours. How tedious was this?
Other than the sleep deprivation until you got used to the system, it was hard because when I get done at 6 in the morning, I drive back to Hazleton, 50 miles from my mom and I, where we were from, and I would try to sleep with dark shades, and you had to get into a routine, because one time you get home, you'd be tired. The next time, you wouldn't be tired, so by the time you get to work, you're tired. so it was difficult, but it did work out, and I loved it because no one bothered me. I was
No one bothered you. Did you ever get notes from the program director? Did they ever do a formal review
George
of your
Gilbert,
show?
One time, are you ready for this? This is something unbelievable.
This is that double. Wait. I have to be a good host. He's talking about WARM in Scranton, Northeast Pennsylvania. When he was there, it was the highest rated share station in America. He was pulling 50 shares on that radio station. And the genius who created it is a man named George Gilbert. Now, tell me about your conversation with George.
And by the way, George, double G for thee, had been at WIBG in Philadelphia. And then he went to start the station in Scranton. He brought it up from Susquehanna Broadcasting to number one in the country. And it was even more than 50%. It was, I think, up to 60 or 70%. But anyway, he called me in one day, and it was a tiring day for me. I was really tired. And whatever, he calls me, and he starts playing this tape, one of my air checks, because they had a big brother, had a big 12-inch, and it was, I think it was 12-inch metal tape reel-to-reel, and they would tape the whole station for 24 hours to know, make sure you're playing your spots, marking them off, playing your public service announcements, et cetera, et cetera. And he started lacing me out for being too tired. And after he got done, he was very nice, and he said, just straighten up and fly right, et cetera, et cetera. But would you believe, and I never forgot this, that the air check was sent to a man who was blind at Susquehanna headquarters, the flagship station at WSBA, and he could hear every mistake you made. He could hear how tired you were. He could hear how excited you were. He could hear how bad you were. He could hear how good you were. It was incredible. And when I heard that, I said, well, I better be good every night.
Well, did George have any specific tips?
He just said to do better because I'd missed some. You know, everything was important those days for top 40. Right. 20 after the hour was sports. 20 before the hour was this. And time checks. And you play the top 40, and the number one station was played every hour in the hour, like Sugar, Sugar. I got tired of after a while of the Archies. So, but he was a nice man. He could be tough. He was a German fella, and he was tough. But he was fair and just. And the tape did stink, and I could have done better, and I did do better.
Well, that's the humility of being a priest to admit that. The thing about George Gilbert. Was he was the program director. He also did a show, and he did a spectacular show, and he was a spectacular
Fantastic.
Program director. And everybody I've ever known, no matter who they've worked for before or since, always says that George Gilbert in freaking Scranton was better than anybody they worked with in New York, Chicago, Boston. He was the guy. But I'll tell you an interesting ego thing about George. He worked at WARM, and then I'll stop my radio indulgence here. He worked at WARM before he went to WIBG in Philadelphia. And then after he left WIBG in Philadelphia, he went back to WARM.
And, Amen.
But this was the interesting part. Why did he go to WIBG? I'll tell you why he went to WIBG. It was not because it was a bigger city. Because
no, please tell me why. I'm very, very interested.
Everybody wanted George. He got calls from Chicago, New York, Boston. Everybody wanted to hire George. But only the management of Wibbage had the good sense to get in a freaking car and drive to Scranton and take him out and pitch him. Everybody else wanted to do it on the phone. They showed him the courtesy of going to Scranton to meet with him. That's why he went to Wibbage. All right, Father, I've got to go. Father Drucker, a great friend of Sterling Every Damn Night, thank you for the Thanksgiving phone call. Thank you for the blessings. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about my time working with the Pennsylvania State Police. It was the late 90s, and a detective in my office was working on a case where vehicles were being stolen in the New York City area. They were transported down to Philadelphia. In Philly, they were having their vehicle identification numbers changed, fitted with new documents. From there, the vehicles were being transported down to Jacksonville, Florida, where they were sold on a used car lot. And this gang was up and running for several years until we stumbled upon it. Well, in the middle of the case, we came up with an informant that was embedded with this group. And one afternoon, he calls us up and he says, one of the stolen cars, for whatever reason, it's not going down to Florida, but it's heading back into New York City, and it's got a couple of kilos in it. So we got in touch with the Pennsylvania State Police, who were all over it, and they decided they were going to follow the car back, and then once the car made its way back into New York City, we were going to pull it over and arrest these guys. So when you're doing surveillance like this back in the old days, this is before cell phones. So what we were doing was our detectives were getting in contact with the Pennsylvania State Police headquarters, and the Pennsylvania State Police were following it. We're on their radios going back and forth coordinating. So it was a mess. So all we knew was that we had the plate of the stolen vehicle. It was a black BMW 5 Series, and it was being followed by two Pennsylvania State Troopers in a Jeep. So the Pennsylvania State Troopers Jeep was following this car over the George Washington Bridge. So what my partner and I had to do was, in rush hour traffic, drive across the George Washington Bridge, make a U-turn, get back on the George Washington Bridge, and try to find these two Pennsylvania State Troopers whose battery had run out. So what we did was we figure out there's two white guys sitting in a Jeep in rush hour traffic with a Pennsylvania State with a Pennsylvania plate. We pull up to them. We go, are you guys the troopers? They said, yeah. We passed them a couple of batteries, and then we were able to resume surveillance. Once the vehicle made its way into Washington Heights in Manhattan, we were able to pull the car over and arrest the occupants. The BMW was stolen, all right, with a changed vehicle identification number. However, there were no kilos in the car. So did the bad guys know they were being followed and dump the kilos out? Oh, there were never kilos in the car to begin with. To this day, we don't know, because they weren't talking. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Alex Daddario.
Do you just look at my boobs?
I was not my intention. I didn't stare directly at them.
You're looking at them right now.
Now I did. Because you were talking about them.
I am shocked, as you are, that there are actually malls in America, like all of them, that are scratching their heads and wondering, why is it that there aren't as many people that there used to be in the mall? Why is it that as many people aren't coming to the mall that used to come to the mall? And as a result, many of these malls, as you know, are closing. There are many abandoned malls, big abandoned malls throughout the country. I want to play you something here. I say that a major reason for it is karma. Yeah, karma. You want to know what the karma is? How dare you charge a family to have their kids sit on Santa's lap? How dare you charge a family to take pictures of your kid on Santa's lap? You have to buy a package of photos at a mall. You got to buy a package. You got to waste $28, $35, $50 for a package of photos with Santa. You have to go on an app. Nobody over 35 wants an app. Nobody over 35 has any interest in a map. Map. To schedule an appointment for your kid to sit on Santa's knee. Oh, are you scheduled? No, I'm at the mall. It's not good enough. It's not good enough to just be at the mall. You have to be scheduled. Do you have our app?
No.
You have to get the app.
Yeah, but there's no Wi-Fi in the mall.
And that's the kicker, isn't it? How many malls don't have Wi-Fi, but they expect you and me to have an app in order to sit on Santa's lap? It should be a freaking local ordinance throughout the United States of America that says, one, there will be no tolls on the highway, and two, you will never have to pay for your kid to sit on Santa's lap and have their picture taken on Santa's lap. And how short-sighted. Because the minute you take that kid in there, you're going to be buying more than you ever planned on. The minute the kid comes in the mall with you, all of a sudden you're in the Lego store buying the most expensive chips of plastic imaginable that will put you through hell. If you step on one of them, in the dark, going to the bathroom. There is no greater hell than stepping on a Lego block on your way to the bathroom in the dark. And you thought you could get to the bathroom and back and fall right back to sleep? You would have if you hadn't stepped on the Lego block on the way in that you bought at the mall because you took your kid to the mall. Who wants that and the pretzel and the bourbon chicken? Those are all of the reasons that the malls are dying. It's bad karma. You don't charge kids to sit on Santa's lap. Sterling every damn night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
What? Did you hear what happened a few minutes ago? That our so-called president has pardoned his son. But first, the weather.
More news, more news. Day and night around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
Talk 1300. In Albany, New York, is owned by Paul Vandenberg, who is also a legendary morning man in Albany. The legislators in Albany, they're very nervous whenever Paul mentions their name. He controls their future. But right now, he's witnessing the weather hell of the luge, I-90, in upstate New York. Paul, what's the latest on this incredible 30 inches of snow in Buffalo? Who the hell needs that?
Well, Walter, first of all, it's my honor to talk to you. Secondly, this is always a confusing part of the winter season to people around the country. Buffalo is in the westernmost part of the state, and they get this thing called lake effect snow, which is remarkable. We in the eastern part of the state are always, even back here, watching and marveling at what's going on out there. But they right now are getting pounded. Also, north of us, I'm in the central, more centralized part of the state, in the state capital in Albany. And around here, we got some snow on Thanksgiving, but a bulk of the snow is going to the north of us. So the northern part of the state, up near the Canadian border, and the western part of the state, in the out in the Buffalo and Ohio, Pennsylvania area, are getting pounded. But we are very fortunate in that we've received about 6 inches so far. But you're right. When it comes through here, Walter, it comes through here really hard.
And are you satisfied with the snow clearing operation? Do you think they have yet to figure this out? My daughter drove. This was interesting. My daughter had to drive from Cleveland to Syracuse today. And she said when she hit Pennsylvania, it was a disaster. She was driving 20 miles an hour. The second she hit the New York State line and got technically onto the New York State Thruway, clear as a bell, no problem.
Right, right, right. This always seems to be, you know, it's interesting you bring this up because I've been doing mornings here for over 30 years, and I think I'm just the same as any other morning man in any other market. These strange weather conditions bring out a lot of conversation. And one of the conversations over the years have been basically what you're asking. How is the cleanup around where you are? Well, it's spotty. And I'll tell you, your daughter told you that she hit New York and it was clear. I find back here even in New York, the first part of the season when there's snow, they're out, they're prepared, they're up to it, they're ready to do it. But as the winter goes on, it gets tougher and tougher. And near the end, if you get a storm at the end of March or something of that nature, it's really hard. The conditions and the clearing of the conditions around our area seem to depend on whether or not the storm comes really early in the winter season or later, with the earlier part being better than the later part when it comes to clearing it out.
Now, Paul Vandenberg, being a legend in Albany and wired to Albany, do you have an explanation? Did any workers whisper to you why it sucks toward the end of the season and is much better at the beginning? Do you have a hypothesis for this?
I think that's a good question. I think there's a couple of reasons. Number one, they're all tired and sick of it like we are. And number two, that at that point, with many of these localities, they've run out of money that they have budgeted, and they have to figure out another way to pay for it all. I think those are the two main reasons.
I was shocked to hear that the snow plows themselves in Buffalo were getting stuck in the snow. And I just figured from the weight of those trucks that wouldn't happen. But apparently they get stuck in the snow.
That's happened before. You know, Walter, that really is the most to me, the most incredible part of the country. The snow and the way it comes blowing in on Buffalo. And it's every year. It's not like they get a year off here or there. It's every year where they just get pounded out there. And it's just hard to navigate. It's hard to get around. But they seem to get through it. They do get stuck every once in a while. But their one of their expertises in Buffalo is clearing snow, and they do a pretty good job of it.
Are you satisfied with the new removal of the toll gates? That now it's all the overhead devices, license plate scanners, and the tolls, the actual physical toll gates are being eliminated.
You know what? I am. And I know you're a national show, and I don't know if everybody around the country knows how it is in New York down the thruway, but we do. We have the overhead scanners, and the toll booth is now a thing of the past. So all these areas, Walter, where we used to have to wait and wait and wait for the toll man, we don't have to wait anymore. They just pick up on the scanner. Now, I'm more than happy with it because my wife always makes sure that I have the what they call easy pass.
Right.
Which you leave on your dashboard, and the scanner hits it, and you're all set. Now, if you don't have one of those, then they send you a bill in the mail, and I don't know what that's like. But if you have the easy pass with cash in it, and the scanner picks it up, you're all set. There's no paper. There's no mail. There's no nothing. Quite frankly, I'm not only happy with it, but I'm kind of impressed with the really good job they've done with that. You know, you don't expect, at least in New York, you don't expect the public sector to do a very good job with a whole lot. Well, with that, they've done a very good job.
Paul Vandenberg is the morning star of Talk 1300, 98.7 FM in Albany, New York. He is he's easily the most powerful guy I've talked to on this show, and he's like a grown-up.
Let's calm down.
He's very official. You know, he looks official. He is official. And it's an honor to have Paul Vandenberg's radio station as one of the very first Sterling on Sunday affiliates. Now, this so-called governor of yours, this governor who became governor without an election,
right.
And she became governor without an election, and she says wacky stuff. Do you think all of this wacky stuff is going to settle down and she's going to realize that maybe President Trump has a clue?
Well, she was elected when Andrew Cuomo was forced to resign. She inherited the job. She was the lieutenant governor.
Right.
And then she won her first election barely in a very Democrat state. She barely beat a real gentleman by the name of Lee Zeldin. And chances are very good she will not be governor again because she'll be primaried. But to get back to the question, she did some elbowing of the president-elect early on, but then she had a conversation with him. It seems to have gone well. And she, like a lot of other people, I think, have come to the realization that it might be better to try to work with him than to work against him. She also, Walter, is from Buffalo. Buffalo is her hometown out there. And she understands the snow of Buffalo and the elements out there as well as anybody in Albany. But I think you'll see her work with Trump. She's going to get pulled on by members of her own party, the Democrat Party, to not work with him. But I think in the end, because she'll want to be reelected, I think she'll do what she can to work with him.
Now, tomorrow morning on Talk 1300, Paul Vandenberg is going to do, my guess, for 4 hours straight, the snow. My hunch is you're going to talk about the snow for 4 hours straight. Would that be a good guess?
That'd be a very poor guess on your part.
Really?
We'll talk about the weather. Actually, the problem we have here right now, Walter, is the temperatures are dropping. We had, you know, back here, we had a really good September, October, November. We had 10 weeks with very little, if any, rain. And the last 2 weeks, we've gotten a little rain. But No, tomorrow, a bulk of the weather we'll talk about tomorrow will be the cold weather, because we've been very, very lucky. But now all of a sudden the mid to upper 20 degrees have settled in, and it will only go down from here.
And the most important question for an upstate New Yorker is, Paul Vandenberg, where do you get your pizza?
Well, there's a couple of places here. We are fortunate where we live, just outside of Albany, that we have an Italian restaurant right up the street from us. And they make fantastic pizza. They're a very small corner place. We kind of stumbled into it when we first moved here. And we've been getting our pizza from this very small little Italian restaurant Albany, and we're very, very happy with it.
What's it called?
Raymond's, I believe.
Raymond's, you believe. Paul Vandenberg, who is one of the 100 most influential talk show hosts in America, according to Talkers Magazine. And that's a big deal, because the thing about talk show hosts in America is we all believe we're the most influential talk show host in America. And when anybody else picks up on that rumor, we're deeply and profoundly flattered, and we torture our families with it for months or years.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, the psychosis of the talk show host, right? Now, yeah. you've dealt with all of them, and I know you've dealt with some really big time guys, some really big time gals along the way, and I think your description is really, really close of what we all seem to go through. But I think I've over the years done a pretty good job of not getting too carried away with my thoughts and my opinions, because, you know, Walter, I'm one of these guys, if you listen to me, and you have, and I'm forever grateful, I take a lot of phone calls. And when you take a lot of phone calls, it's hard for your ego to get carried away, because a lot of the people like to agree with you and carry on with your point, but at the same time, they like to nibble at you and elbow you a little bit too. And you don't get away with too much here at Albany.
We don't get away with too much at home either. I often say to Mrs. Sterling, I'll say, "Well, why don't you listen to my show? Why don't you listen to it?"
And, yeah.
And she says, "Because I hear your show all day at home." And that ends that. Paul Vandenberg, you're a great man. 6 to 10 every morning on our affiliate in Albany, Talk 1398.7 FM. Paul Vandenberg.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Leave your weapons at home. Strippers on the loose. Later, Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I share the story of the time myself and the Pennsylvania State Police followed a stolen car across the George Washington Bridge. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by history buffs.
When was America last great?
For me, I would say the turning point for our country was 1913, when we passed the 17th Amendment.
24 past the hour, 24 past the hour. Walter M. Sterling. Ashtabula, Ohio, today got the most snow it ever got, ever. 30 inches. And Dorothy Sterling drove through it with her sister Meredith, going from grandma's house in Cleveland to her school in Syracuse. And Dorothy's going to be on the phone with us right now. Dorothy, how cold is it where you are in Syracuse? Hello? Having issues. Do-do-do. Well, I can hum. You know, I'm a pretty good hummer. There were astonishing number of UFO reports this week over Washington, Phoenix, Los Angeles, and Dave Scott will be with you and me at midnight, 9 p.m. West Coast, in order to share that information. All right, is Dorothy there? Why are we having... The system's not working. Well, thank God, because, you know, the thing about the system that we work with is it's so old it's amazing to me it works at all. What is it? It's got to be 22, 23 years old, which is one-tenth of the average age of my listener. This is Sterling on Sunday, and I'm here every night. You can hear me every damn night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern on the Odyssey app. The worst name for a great company. Who the heck came up with Odyssey? Everybody spells it wrong. They think it's O-D-Y. No, it's not that bad. ABC show, it's not that. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Odyssey. It's a great company and a great app. And then, if you have the app, you can hear me wherever you go, whatever city you're in, no problem. 855-839-1210 is my number. Paul Vandenberg mentioned he gets tons of calls. I think it's your job to provide tons of calls. It's the least you can do. It's a minimum. If you're having to suffer with a football game now, I'm sorry that you've had to work around. You've had to do a workaround for that. Gentlemen, are we close to a solution or should I move on? Oh, Dorothy, you just drove through Ashtabula, Ohio, which had the most snow it has ever had today in history, 30 inches of snow. You drove from Grandma's in Cleveland to Syracuse on I-90, otherwise known as the Luge. Please share this experience with us.
Yes, it was quite the drive. So we get up until Ashtabula, totally fine. We get a warning sign that says go 40. The roads were clear. We thought we'd be fine. We thought it was from the day before. I swear, not 3 minutes later, it is pouring snow. It's a horrible blizzard. We couldn't see past the car in front of us. And it was just horrible. So the roads were bad. And then we get to Erie, Pennsylvania, where it was really bad. And today it was really bad. Couldn't see the roads, like the snow on the roads got like rock hard. Like it felt like a rock. So it was very bumpy and weird. And luckily we didn't get into any accidents, but it was just awful. And then we get out of Erie, Pennsylvania, and the minute we hit the Pennsylvania-New York border, the roads clear. It was still snowing, still a blizzard, but the roads were completely clear. So it was just, my dad said, Walter here, said it was because of the toll roads, because in New York they use tolls, but it was awful. And then the minute we're out of Buffalo, the snow stops. It's clear. It looks like it didn't snow at all. So it was a very weird experience and really awful to drive on, but luckily we were doing it during the day.
A curse on Erie, Buffalo, Ashtabula. Normally, how long is that drive from Grandma's to college?
5 hours. Today, it was 7-8 hours.
7 or 8 hours. And did you see a lot of accidents?
I saw a lot of trucks pulled over, a lot of cars pulled over. Some I saw like at least two cars that I think were just abandoned from yesterday because they were covered in snow. But luckily I didn't see any accidents. No, I saw an accident in Syracuse, actually, but we had no snow here. So,
all right, that's Dorothy Sterling, an ACE student at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. I am honored and thrilled that you would actually agree to be on the radio with your father, because what could be less cool than that? All right, Dorothy Sterling, thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
And I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday, live everywhere. Two things you won't believe. One, Hunter Biden has been pardoned by his father. That happened tonight. This is your news here now. And massive UFO sightings all week over America. Dave Scott in seconds.
Sterling every night, lost in space. Mission control, Dave Scott.
Dave Scott. I mean, Dave, are you actually going to have time? If you need extra time, please grab it. This is an extraordinary week for UFO sightings and landings.
Isn't it?
And they've been landing on runways. They landed near our capital. The blaring lights over many cities. I'm just going to shut up. And Dave Scott, our ufologist, metaphysicist, Bigfoot expert, take it away. It's yours, buddy. What the hell happened this week?
Well, it's been a busy week in UFOs, as you just stated. But before I even get into that, Walter, I just want to say thank you to the Midnight Misfits, yourself, and many others on the Spaced Out Radio team and my fans, because yesterday was our actual 10th anniversary of being on the air.
Well, that doesn't just happen. In our rough and tumble business, if you get to stay on the air more than an hour and a half, you're really good at what you do.
Well, thank you. And I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity for coming on this show and helping our audience grow. It's so much fun being here each and every night. So let's get to the UFO story. I'm not sure what the hell is going on. The reason why is because it just seems too coincidental. You have the orb that was in the UK airport that seemed to land and hover about 3-4 feet off the ground. That was the video and photo were taken by a pilot of an airliner. And it is this round orb. I mean, when they zoomed in on it, to me, Walter, it actually looked like it was duct taped with something. It looked messy. You know, you expect a UFO to be more spherical, more round, no edges. That's what we've heard from people like Bob Lazar, who've worked with craft and people who've come in contact with them. So that one looked a little bit odd. There was a situation in Arizona where it was almost like people were calling it the Phoenix Lights Part 2, where this giant craft, it was lit up by about six or eight bright lights, that was just hovering in the sky. It seemed like there was orbs hovering all around it, and nobody seemed to know what happened with that one. It just kind of was there, and then it wasn't. It flew off into the sunset. The one over Washington, well, you know, we've seen and heard about military bases around there having these orbs all around. But we have to think logically. If it is an adversary, what we are seeing in Ukraine-Russia conflict with the drone warfare, they don't have lights on the drone. They don't, because that way they can attack at night without people seeing where they are. And I believe that people who are saying this is Russia, this is China, this is Iran, or any other adversary of the United States that are putting orbs around these military bases, flying them in, I do not believe that for a second, because the first thing they are going to do is take the lights off of the orb so you cannot see it. So let's rule them out. So then it comes down to two situations, two factors. Is it alien or is it the United States? With all of the hubbub lately around UFOs, this gives a prime section of the, hey, let's have some fun and make a joke community, the YouTube community, and the others who are playing pranks to try and fly drones into sensitive areas, I think that could very well be it. Or it could be the military themselves doing this. Why would they do it? Well, guess what? There's a new warfare called drone warfare that is out there, and they want to be able to see what is really going on. How easy is it for a drone to penetrate United States airspace, especially on sensitive areas like Air Force bases, nuclear power facilities, nuclear weapons marketing, or not marketing, pardon me, facilities? We see all of this kind of going on, Walter. And am I convinced this is actual aliens? No. No, I am not. And look, I want it to be aliens. I really do want it to be aliens, because that's a good thing. But when we have people talking about everything regarding UFOs right now, UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, whatever you want to call them, the one thing that we are seeing is that there is a lot of hype around this subject right now. A lot of hype. And we don't want this to all of a sudden become a laughing stock. Well, how does it become a laughing stock? By situations like this. The military, they want money. They want budgets. They don't want any of their budget from Donald Trump or the new Doge crew of Vivek and Elon to come on in and say, you know those trillions of dollars you lose every year? We're going to see where those are going. They don't want that. So how do we do it? We create a fear mechanism that basically creates exactly what they've been saying, that these orbs, these UFOs, UAP, whatever you want to call them, Walter, they become a threat narrative. And that's what creates jobs. That's what creates budgets. So I think this is all a little bit too coincidental. I do not believe personally that it is actually aliens.
That's amazing. And that's a lot of good thinking. It does seem pretty coincidental. And it's the first time ever, thanks to Nancy Mace, that they've ever really had their budget threatened. And then you throw in Elon Musk and President Trump, and people are going to look at their budget. This is a pretty good distraction. You are absolutely right.
It's just the one that makes sense. Look, we know that UFOs have been coming here for years, okay? Decades, centuries, millennia. We know. But we also know that there is a secret government program that they do not want us to come out. We have labeled it the secret space program, where we have technologies flying around in the sky of the United States that we think is UFOs, but is actually our technology. And I learned this about a year and a half ago, where I was talking to somebody in the black operations world. And military programs and military units are usually subject to a couple of things, Walter. They get really cool patches that tell a story that only they know about.
Yes.
And they get military coins. Mm. Well, this person showed me a military coin. Mm. Okay. And that coin was of the Mad Hatter. And one of the things that he told me was, if you want to learn about Black Project programs, you have to understand Alice in Wonderland when you go down the rabbit hole.
This is the great Dave Scott. Dave Scott on YouTube is spacedoutradio.com. Spaced Out Radio puts up many, many terrific videos on YouTube. Go like them, subscribe, support his family. Dave Scott, a great Canadian. What's the temperature where you are right now, I must ask?
Oh, it is about hovering around 34 to 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay, Fahrenheit. I was going to translate the centigrade, but it's 30. Oh, that's nothing. It's minus 19 at the North Pole.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Dave Scott, great friend of Sterling Every Damn Night. Congratulations on your 10 years. Congratulations. I'm Walter M. Sterling. You've heard this 73-year-old comic, right? We love him. If he'll start, of course I can't start it. That would make too much sense. It'd be too easy. All right. Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Whoopi, Daphne, eight kids,
150-year-old house.
Dan and Vicky Bicker.
I'm Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you about life in our old house with our eight kids. Our oldest daughter is a professional ballerina. She was dancing since she was how old?
Two.
So from 2 years old to today, you can imagine, I think I have literally seen or been in 100 nutcrackers.
And I have you topped by at least five times that many.
It's showtime for the ballet world. The Nutcracker is performing at a theater near you.
It's kind of funny. I think some people think the Nutcracker is the only ballet in existence because it's like the most popular, right?
You, as the mother of the ballerina, have taken on the role of tutu making. So our house right now, literally, sequins, gowns, tutus,
okay.
Sewing machines.
Pause for
cords,
1 second.
All over.
You just made that like when our daughter started dancing, I started making costumes. I've been costuming for many, many more years than she's been alive, right, and involved in ballet since I was three. So I've done the whole thing, all the shows, all the performances, and everything backstage that happens, I've done it.
So I hate glitter, and I don't like it getting on me. And I also then hate glitter's big cousin, the sequin.
How about the Swarovskis, honey? Do you love those? The flat back heat press.
Kind of like the crystals.
The rhinestones.
But you know it's bad when I wake up and I have glitter or sequins.
Right, because I don't do glitter on
in
costumes.
My underpants.
Right.
It's everywhere in the house.
And it won't be for long. But you see, the thing is, right now, currently, let's just look at what we've got going on. I'm working for multiple ballet companies, making tutus for multiple ballet companies. We live in a small town. Not that many people make tutus in the small town we live in. So all the ballet companies around, I'm making them for them. Our daughter's performing in Savannah this week. I just made a Sugar Plum Fairy tutu that she'll wear with the Savannah Ballet this week. And I just started the Miss America costume.
Insider's guide, whoever has the role of Sugar Plum is usually the best dancer in the dance company. Snow Queen, number two. Is that accurate?
It's kind of close, yeah.
What would be the number three role?
I think you would like to claim that it's Drosselmeyer, since it's the one you've performed so many times.
Aha, correct.
Let's get back to that spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, go see it. And just know that all the scary things that are happening from the beginning of the battle scene till the end, that's a dream. So, you know, don't be frightened.
And that's your spoiler alert. To learn more, follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you want to find me, I'm on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Richard Nixon.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
All right, I want you to imagine this. You're listening to the radio, you're watching TV in your city. And there's a host on the TV station, the local TV station. There's a host on the local radio station that you really enjoy. You don't know that person at all. You think you do. But really, what do you know? You know that it's somebody whose broadcast you enjoy, have been enriched by, learned something from, many positive things. Because right now, you have at least 60 other stations you could be listening to. You're driving an 18-wheeler. You're driving across the country on 80. You're going up and down 95, Florida to New York. You can punch up many other radio stations. And I'm grateful for every 18-wheeler that listens to Sterling Every Damn Night. And Keith Mortensen, oh my God, what a great guy Keith Mortensen is. He drove an 18-wheeler for UPS. He retired. He's living the life that we all want to live, Keith. His big challenge is, how does he schedule more time with his grandkid? That's the problem we want. But every broadcaster has another life. They have the life when the microphone goes off. And for most of us, I can tell you it's interesting, pleasant. A surprising number of broadcasters are midnight misfits and left-handed and flat-footed. That's who we are. We're a flat-footed, left-handed bunch. From time to time, with the people you watch on radio, on TV or on the radio, things happen. The tree actually falls on their house. A drunk driver rams into their car and makes it difficult for them to use their hands. They have a child who's very sick, and every penny they've got has to go to caring for that child. Catastrophic events. And these people who you enjoy on the radio or TV from time to time need extra help. They need financial assistance. They need checks. There is exactly one charitable organization designed for broadcasters. And because it's the time of year that it is, I want to tell you the name of that organization, and I encourage you to make a donation and learn about it. It's an interesting organization. It's called the Broadcasters Foundation of America. The Broadcasters Foundation of America, BFOA.org. I'm pretty sure it's a .org. BFOA. They're located 125 West 55th Street, and this is a rated charity. There's an organization that rates charities, and they do it based largely on how much they actually give away as opposed to administrative cost. This is one of the few charities, the Broadcasters Foundation of America, that has a 100% positive rating from the charity rating service. The people who run the Broadcasters Foundation of America happen to be people in media who have been successful. They don't need money from this organization. They're looking for ways to donate the money. They're looking for people to help. You might be surprised to know that there's a famous disc jockey on the air who sits there with a chemo bag through their show because they have cancer. And they're sitting there with a chemotherapy bag on them with an IV while they're broadcasting on air. You would be surprised at how many of the people you enjoy need extra help, not because they're out of work or because they're sloppy with their money. No, no, because of a catastrophic event that they have to prove in order to get money from the Broadcasters Foundation of America. Take a look at their website. See the stories. Learn how the money is distributed. And I urge you, and you notice I've never mentioned any other charity. This is the charity. And it's because the chairman is Scott Herman, and the president, CEO, is Kevin McCarthy. And these are solid guys. That's what I can tell you. This is a solid bunch here. And every donation, every check that's written, is reviewed by the board of directors. Every single board of director looks at the checks, reviews it. Many of the people on the board are names you know. This is a gold-plated charity, or else I wouldn't even mention it to you. It's the Broadcasters Foundation of America. It's Christmas. Many of the people that you've enjoyed for free, because they're on radio or TV, real radio and TV, over the air, you've enjoyed them for free. And from time to time, the people you've enjoyed need help. The Broadcasters Foundation of America is the way they can get the help. I hope you take a look at the website and consider making a check. I'm Walter Sterling. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
Don't play cutesy with me.
Sterling every night. Study books, rusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Train Hard, Rest Harder. Once our plates were empty, Kristen leaned back in his chair, swirling the wine in his glass as he studied me. Want to know what I'm thinking? I gulped my drink, hoping it would dampen some of the heat creeping up my neck. Sure. While I had a few doubts at the beginning, you followed all the rules for this trip. Well, most of the time, but knowing how you are, I'm considering it a success. He set the glass on the table, then folded his hands behind his head, the sleeves of his t-shirt caught around his bulky arms. So, I'm going to let you choose how you want to spend the rest of the evening. Whether you want to finish the book you are reading, or go to sleep early to get a good night's rest uninterrupted, it's up to you. My eyebrow arched. Are those my only two options? Letting out a low chuckle, he licked his lips. Fresh wave of arousal cooled between my thighs. Did you have something else in mind? I debated playing more of these coy games, but it wasn't my typical style. We each knew what the other wanted. After finishing the rest of my wine in one swig, I stood. The gold flecks in his eyes glimmered in the dim light as I leaned over him, planting one hand on either side of his shoulders as I gripped the back of his chair. Come to bed with me. Stay the night this time. Tristan snaked a hand around the back of my head, guiding me downward. His lips met mine, and I tasted the heady remnants of the wine on his velvety tongue. I inched closer to him, and he broke the kiss, leaving me breathless. "I'll meet you upstairs in a few minutes," he murmured. With the flames blooming inside me, I needed to rid myself of my thick sweatshirt sooner rather than later anyway. Turning around, I sauntered out of the room. "I'll be waiting." In my suite, I rushed through my nighttime routines, shedding my clothing in stages. I looked around the bedroom, debating what sort of scene I wanted to set, and opted for mirroring the previous night. After folding back the covers and fluffing the pillows, I turned off all the lights, save for one of the lamps on the nightstand. Tristan entered the room before I could slip between the sheets. Whirling around, I gasped, resisting the urge to cover myself up. I recovered, though, and stood beside the bed, completely bared to him. "I didn't think you were so impatient," I teased. Saying nothing, he strode across the room until he towered over me. Placing one hand on either side of my face, he claimed my mouth in a fervent kiss, his tongue delving inside. I braced my palms on his broad chest and leaned into him. He pushed against me in return. This time, I pulled away first. I sat down and slid toward the center of the bed. Bunching the pillows beneath my head, I laid on my side and watched him undress. That devilish smirk played upon his lips as he reached for the hem of his t-shirt and yanked it off, the muscles in his arms flexing with the movement. A pale glow from the lamp illuminated every chiseled plane in his chest and torso, the deep ridges drawing my eyes downward. He tugged at the ties at the front of his waistband, loosening the knot and pushing his shorts down over his hips. I didn't know what the future had in store for us, but for the rest of the night, he was mine. The mattress bounced as he hopped onto it and rolled to face me. "So, any specific requests for tonight?" he asked. With one fingertip, I traced a line around his pecs as I considered his question. An idea sprang into my mind, and I hoped the wan lighting would conceal some of my self-consciousness. "I want to watch you." I paused over his heart, feeling the steady thrum of its pulse. "I want to see your face while you're on top of me." "Oh my, I think I'd better stop there for tonight. But you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Train Hard, Rest Harder, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
It's the people of Walmart on Sterling at night.
Walmart has an amazing selection of sporting goods items. And if you've ever been into a Walmart, you can buy bows and arrows, fishing lures. You can get almost anything you'd ever want at a wonderful Walmart. University Drive, Denton, Texas. 6:40 in the morning. Apparently there was a guy roaming through the store with the bow and the arrow shooting at random shoppers. And this just happened the other day. So the Christmas music was going on. Dashing through the snow. Oh, there's an arrow. Apparently not a good shot. Didn't hit anybody, thank goodness. So officers went and to the store. This guy went and ran out of the store, according to the associates. And they found him about 9 o'clock, about a mile away from that Walmart. He had stolen the bow and arrows. He also stole a hatchet from the store and arrowheads. I didn't realize arrowheads were at Walmart, but doggone it, you can get so many great things at Walmart, including a wonderful selection of olive oil. You can get great value olive oil at an amazing price, whether it's just your standard issue olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, or extra virgin organic olive oil. That's what I get, because I'm kind of geeky. This man is yet to be identified by the city of Denton, Texas, but he has been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon for allegedly shooting arrows at the people and so much more. Yeah, generally speaking, in Texas especially, there's a lot of people who always have a gun on them in Texas. If you're shooting arrows at random people, you're lucky to be walking away. Number two, it's not a good thing. Now, hopefully this feller was inebriated or under some sort of a chemical thing. That at least would be a good excuse. And again, don't shoot at people, whether with guns or a bow and arrow, inside a Walmart. Sort of helpful advice. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by lesbians.
How long have you been into women? I didn't say I was. Yeah, and after.
All right, it's 12:50 on the East Coast, 9:50 on the West Coast. This is Sterling every damn night. This phenomena of rocking the cosmos, of rocking the primordial ooze of our culture, of our society, has always fascinated me. Listen to this.
Top 10 last week, but there's a reversal from last week's number 8 down to this week's number 9 for Cliff Richard's On the Beach. And it's another top 10 sensation this week at number 8 for Manfred Mann.
That's Alan Freeman, the first man in England to play rock and roll.
All right, that was Ernie Andrews on the trade label, Make Me a Present to You. Here's something everyone knows about.
And that's Alan Freed, the first man in America to play rock and roll and named it rock and roll. Alan Freed and Alan Freeman, I guess a lot of Alans needed to be freed.
Man, oh, Manischewitz, what a wine, and what a gift, too. You know, Manischewitz wine, everybody's favorite, is in two beautiful crystal clear decanters and luxurious new gift cartons. Yes, this holiday season, give Manischewitz wine in decanter quarts.
These boys did to stir the primordial ooze, to get us on our feet, to get our hearts beating. Whenever you watch a Beatles concert, you see it's different. It's from a different dimension.
Falling like rain from the sky. Is it for hell?
the primordial ooze stirred up by the Beatles changed everything. And it's interesting, at the time, they had no idea that they had changed everything. But there it was. And by the way, Alex, you have that file. It starts with the word Andy, but I don't think we have time to do it now. The Beatles changed everything. And that's not a profound or obvious or a profound observation. It's an observation we've all made. But isn't it interesting? They were not on the Ed Sullivan Show the most. The Dave Clark Five was on the Ed Sullivan Show the most. And right, yes. And what happened to the Dave Clark Five? Where are they? And Herman's Hermits, where are they? And Jerry and the Pacemakers, what happened to them? And Freddie and the Dreamers, what happened to them? Where did all of they go? They had the normal life of a pop star. They did. But the Beatles, you go see a Paul McCartney concert in the past few years, and they're falling down in the aisle. You can't get a seat. You have to beg for tickets. It truly was an astonishing, culture-changing event that happened when? At exactly the moment this country needed them. That the world needed them. Moments after JFK was killed, murdered, slaughtered, the Beatles arrived and made everything okay and said, the things you're worried about, concerned about, no need. And the best part about the Beatles, as I understand it, is that parents hated them, freaking hated them. What does a 14, 15-year-old want more than their parents to hate something they're listening to? Oh, God, my parents hated the Beatles. My grandparents hated the Beatles. It was quite something. But so there's Paul McCartney today with a very interesting life. I think there are two people on earth who are truly powerful. Paul McCartney and Taylor Swift. Why? They have all the money they'll ever need. I've never heard anybody say, I hate Paul McCartney. Ringo Starr doesn't say he hates Paul McCartney. They've worked out detente. They have a relationship. Any man in the world would take Paul McCartney's call. He could call any world leader, and they'd pick up that phone right away. And almost any woman would still sleep with him at 80. He seems to be doing fine at 80. Not a big problem. And that hair. And what, Ringo Starr's 83? They seem to have been touched with a form of immortality. It's remarkable, remarkable what happened. Every kid I know loves the Beatles. My 12-year-old daughter's favorite song is a Beatles song. Real Love, the one of the last two they recorded, one of the last two they put together, the McCartney hobbled together. Her favorite song is Real Love. My 12-year-old's favorite song is Real Love. That's the magic of the Beatles. Truly amazing. The greatest gift that you and I can receive is what? A request for help.
A great way to end your day.